accession number 17681, reel 2.
Colonel Robbins, reel 2.
So I went for this interview for which 12 captains appeared for one vacancy. I remember it was the 9th Parachute Battalion. I went back, and the commanding officer said, well, you always wanted to leave this battalion, and I have been asked to find an instructor at an officer cadet training unit. You will go. And I said, well, that isn't quite what I want. I do not want to go on a teaching or administrative job. I want to be with a battalion. You understand that, sir? No, I don't. Off I went. I went to a place called Alton Towers in Staffordshire, which was the seat of the Duke of some, no, I forget his name. And there I was, an instructor, training young officers. With the war, the invasion looming, I wrote to this commanding officer of mine and said, a real sort of creeping letter, saying how much I liked him and couldn't he possibly have me back. And he wrote back and said, no, I'm full. I then, and I always thank the good Lord for this, got hold of the commanding officer who had been my CO in the battle school in which I had been an instructor. And I said, please, will you have me? I know you're full, but please, will you have me? You know me. This man, in some extraordinary way, pulled strings enough to get me removed from this OCTU and to the 4th Wiltshire's instead of the 5th in which I had been. And I joined them a couple of months before the invasion in Rye, where again training was still going on. And that is one of the best bits of good fortune I've had, going into this 4th Battalion with this great man, Colonel Ted Luce, from a great military family. One of his brothers was the first Sea Lord Admiral, so another one was the top Middle East governor. One was in the Navy, got a DSO before very early in the war and was sunk in his submarine. And this man, who was just a West Country cloth merchant, didn't want to be, but had to take the family firm. And he was a TA officer, and he had a TA battalion, and my goodness, I was so happy to be with them. Very nice to be happy when you're going into action, and that is what I was.
What job were you given in the battalion?
Very funny. He had a bit of a sense of humour, as I'm told I have, and he said, I'm sending you to the adjutant, said the colonel's sending you to the PRI. The PRI, the president of the regimental institution, which sells all the fags and chocolates to the troops. Administrative job, which usually an elderly officer has, or an unfit one. And I took that on the chin. Really, what they were doing is looking for somewhere to fit me in, you see. You know, they were full. And I saw one or two mates and said, what about asking for me? And a good friend said to the colonel, I would like Robbins. And then I became a second in command of him, and I went into battle with him, and then very soon, there were so many casualties, I became adjutant, because adjutants were killed and so on. And the colonel said, I don't think I can stand you as adjutant any longer, after some battle. And he took one of his brass crowns off, out of his pocket, and gave them to me. He said, go and command C Company. And that is what I wanted. And that is where my war really began.
Can you tell me about going across to Normandy, please?
Going across was a nightmare. The battalion, how an administrative miracle, because all battalions were split into two, the marching parties, the fighting chaps who went in, and the B echelon transport and heavy stuff. That lot went to Tilbury. Well, the marching people went down to the coast, Portsmouth or something, no, this side. And we separated like that across England, and we met at Point A, Arromanche, to form up as a proper battalion. That happened again and again. How it happened, I don't know. I was one who went off to Tilbury as this chap, second in command. Whilst there, in the most awful conditions on the docks, we heard aeroplanes coming over, much anti-aircraft fire, and then the aeroplane engine stopped. And we said, what's happened there? And then, quite near us, in the east end of London, where we were, would come the most imperial bang. And this, of course, was our first experience of the V1 buzz bombs, they were called. And later on, we actually saw them going across the sky. Pilotless buzz bombs. So from there, we got in the bigger ships with the heavy vehicles, and most appalling weather, stormy, everyone seasick, through the channel, Tilbury, passed over, down to Normandy. We knew we were going there because we'd been very fully briefed by Montgomery himself. And we landed at Arromanche with the big guns of the Royal Navy firing, and over our heads, and these boats we were in would go up on the beach and we'd have to get out. Luckily, the soldiers of the 3rd Division, I think, had been in front of us and had therefore cleared the beach sufficiently for us to not be shot at on the beach as they had been. About a week or two later than that, and we got in and met up with our companies, and then before you knew what had happened, we were sent forward into the front line, front area, and then began to meet the famous German army. Very exciting.
Do you remember your first time in action against the Germans?
Yes, I certainly do. We had to relieve a Scottish battalion in a place called Saint-Mauveur, I think. And we went up Ricky Patel. When we got to the Scottish, they were in the middle of a great battle with the Germans fighting, and there were Scotsmen lying dead all over the place, some in their kilts, some. And the mortar bombs were coming down, and of course, my CO, Colonel Luce, and our small Ricky party really didn't know quite what to do. Anyway, we said to the Scottish, right, we'll get our chaps up. They withdrew, we went in, and we were fairly close quarters to these Germans. And that is when we had German snipers up in church spires and round corners. It was a spasmodic little series of battles, but there were the Germans, and we could see them and were being shot at and shooting them. And a strange part of it was that we felt the French in that particular area were slightly anti-us coming in and disturbing their whole lives. They were very rich. I mean, my first day there I was given cream and camembert cheese and so on, which my baton got hold of me from somewhere. And there were lovely fat cows and lush growth, all of which was going to be ruined within a few days. And there we were. We took up our positions south of we were really meant to be going to capture Caen, but very clearly it became apparent that we were not going to get that easily. There was a very low hill called Hill 112 in that area, which became the scene of very, very bitter fighting. And we didn't realize it would be, but it did. And we were on the reverse slope of this. The Germans had it. And patrols and dead Germans, intelligence revealed that it was the SS we were up against. 10th SS Division, 9th SS Division. In the end, there were about 10 of them on our flank of Normandy, as opposed to one or two light divisions on the Cherbourg side where the Americans were taking. But that was the plan, that we would take the brunt, call Monty's plan, call it off so that the Yanks could go through. In our opinion, they were slower than they need have been. But anyway, my point is that there were these Germans we were facing. And to my General Horrocks, the corps commander then, he said, I want a fighting patrol to go out into no man's land and probe out and find who's there. I want some prisoners, and I want to know what the form is. You see, it was still fairly fluid. The Germans had withdrawn from the initial battle, taken up defensive positions, Caen, this hill, Malto, guarding the river, Orne. And we were wondering, and they were wondering, what would happen next. Robbins was chosen to command this fighting patrol, which was 30 men. We had three carriers. I had a gunner, FOO, with me in his carrier. I had a brigade intelligence officer so that he could send back on his radio information to the divisional commander. And then I had my Wiltshire soldiers. They weren't given much guidance on what to do except get out there and do what I've told you to. Very gingerly we went forward, and eventually, having gone, I can't remember what distance, but at least for half an hour slowly, not seeing many Germans at all, I decided to go forward with one carrier and left the other chaps behind, because I didn't want to, for some reason, get involved in a fight with a battalion with just 30 men. When we went forward, the first thing was we bumped into some SS sentries, outposts, who fired on us, and my machine gunner fired back. I always remember these boys' rosy red faces under their German helmets. They were only kids, but they were clearly knew how to fight. So we fired at them, whether we killed them or not, I don't know. We went round a bit more, and there, to my horror, I looked down in the valley, and I saw what I thought was the whole German army. Tanks, guns, all this side of Caen. So I'm afraid I said to the driver, this is where we turn round. And we did. And I went back. I couldn't find my other chaps. Couldn't find anybody. We were on our own, four of us in this carrier. Carrying out my instructions, I went again, withdrew and went north to find out whether Car Pique Aerodrome was occupied. Nothing. Got to the edge of it, nothing. I drove onto it, nothing. I drove into the middle of the aerodrome, not occupied. And then I came back, and all that must have taken 10 hours. I came back in the dark. My colonel thought I'd been killed, obviously. They had been withdrawn to another area. I came into the Scots Guards, who nearly shot me. They thought I was the enemy, coming in the dark. That's the sort of thing that happens. The interesting thing is, when I reported the aerodrome free, General Horrocks, in fact, sent a personal message saying thank you for all this. And when they put an attack in on Car Pique Aerodrome, the Canadian divisions were put in, to their horror, they met the most frightful opposition. Later, documents were captured in which it said, British reconnaissance group on such and such a date came onto the aerodrome. We did not fire. So I had all these tank guns aimed at me, not one fired. Sensible. I went back with the wrong information. It took 2 weeks for them to capture Car Pique Aerodrome, and many casualties. That's what war's about. Anyway, that was behind the enemy lines, and I didn't like it. And then, following that, of course, we had our first big battle, this division, the first real frontal attack of our division against the SS. All the intelligence had been gathered, and we were forward. My company was right forward, another company left forward. And all our artillery opened up just before HR, which was 0400, dark. And as often happens, the 5.5, that's the medium guns, which is about as big as that table, landed on my forward platoon, killing most of them or wounding most of them. That's before the attack had started. Colonel Luce came up, sorted it out. Men were panicked. I saw one man being wheeled away in a wheelbarrow with no legs. Very distressing in your first big battle. And we expected him to say, right, I'll put another... Not at all. He said, you will go on. But we've only got six men in this. Put another platoon in and let them be the reserve. That... HR must be observed, and it was, and we went forward. And that is where we met SS fanatics in the cornfields, popping up, letting us go through, firing it from behind. And a lot of our chaps were killed in those battles, in the cornfields, up towards this very minor promontory of Hill 112. We never got it. We had to dig in, and the battle to get 112 took 2 or 3 weeks. In the end, of course, we got it. But the casualties in that area were formidable. First night I saw 25 of our Churchill tanks on fire, the way the Germans blew them up. German tanks went through us. And our soldiers were getting quite good by then. We let them go over us, over our trenches. And then we'd come up with our anti-tank guns and fire at them from behind. Their main armour is in front. Better to fire from behind. Sometimes best to fire at their tracks. Stops them. What do? Try and get out. Shot or captured. And those were the sort of battles that were going on for days. Our first battles. Casualties mounting.
You said earlier that you'd been concerned about how your soldiers would stand up to the SS.
Yes.
How, in fact, did you feel about the way they did in practice?
I was very, very impressed. It was really, really good to see the way they stood up to it. On one occasion, a certain regiment had passed through us to get the top of this hill 112. They did a tremendous attack. All their officers were knocked out. The commanding officer had actually climbed up a tree in order to get better observation. A young man, he'd be a very good chap. He was shot dead. Commanding officer dead, company commanders dead. The men didn't quite know what to do, and they were driven back by the Germans, who counterattacked. And when they came through us, which was, we were only 100 yards or two behind, they were shouting the Germans are coming, or they're after us, or whatever the soldiers shout. And very interesting, one or two of our soldiers got up to say, well, if we're going back, we better all go back. Not what you'd expect. Not many did that. And that is where my commanding officer, Luce, showed his calmness. There was panic in the air, you see. And he said, right, Wiltshire's, stay where you are. These chaps have been ordered to go back. Stay where you are and you will fire. You will stop the Germans coming. And that is what happened. When the Germans came through, we stopped them. Because we were all in our positions. But that was a nasty thing. And I was very glad to see that not one Wiltshire went back. They could have done. One or two got out the trenches. Well, it's a matter of leadership, which Luce had, and officers of all ranks must show. And the only one is lucky as an officer, because you've got so much to think about that you're not too worried. But I often pity a poor private soldier. Got nothing to worry, nothing to worry his brain except his own safety. And what is he to think about, poor man? One doesn't realize that till too late. No, when you ask that question, what were they like? They were lovely. But too many were laid out by the end of August. Too many. The worst battles, of course, were to the worst battle of all for Normandy was to follow this. When we broke out. When we'd had another attack, what we also saw was Montgomery's great effort to make a breakout of Normandy, because the Eisenhower's pushing him, the Yanks. So he had all three of our armoured division, the 7th, the 11th, and the Guards armoured, formed up to get Caen. And they all, quite an attack, a lot of Germans were down that end. Operation Goodwood, I think it was called, after a racing thing, but they were all cavalrymen. And we saw a 500 or 1,000 bomber raid before the attack, which we watched with awe as it came over, dropping bomb after bomb on Caen and the outskirts. And then we saw these three armoured divisions going through. We were on high ground, you see, in the 112 area. And the Germans just stopped them with their famous 88mm guns. Horrible to see. So that was a failure. And our own division put in a brigade attack on a village down that end. Dorsets and Hampshires. They were repulsed. 3 weeks later, the Wiltshires were told to attack this area, Meltow it was called. There we found dead Dorsets, Hampshires, unburied, hot weather, rotting. And two Wiltshire battalions went through and captured the Chateau of Meltow. That was a battle honour of ours.
Were you involved in that one?
I was indeed.
What was your own personal experience of that?
Well, I was very lucky in a way. The colonel said, two adjutants have been killed here. One wounded, one killed. Named Robbins, please come and be adjutant for this particular battle. Therefore, I was in the command post, not in my usual position of being a forward attacking company. So I really controlled the battle with the CO from the command post. And there were many casualties in that, a couple of hundred.
What type of things do you have to do in a job like that, in commanding the battle as an adjutant?
Well, the adjutant, you take your orders from the CO. You're on the set to brigade headquarters, who are giving orders or unnecessary advice or whatever it may be, and all that, you decide whether you'll pass it to the commanding officer, who's anywhere, you never know, but you're on the radio to him. And it's a matter of also getting in information from forward companies who ask for more ammunition, who ask for relief, who ask what's to be done next, or if they're good enough, they say, this is what I'm doing, and this is where I've got to, and this is how many I've laid out. This is, you know, you are the collation point. And it's very fortunate if you've got a chap who's cool there and can not panic when things are happening.
What's the main problem in doing a job like that?
A main problem? Well, the main problem I would almost say is that I used to feel the adjutant was a chap I would like to trust as a forward chap. And he must have the answer when you get on to him. So the main problem is he must know what is in his commanding officer's mind. Usually they did. It's control from at the center.
Was it easy to communicate properly in the way in which you should have done?
Oh, yes. I mean, we had... wirelesses went wrong quite often. But also, once you were in a position, you had telephone wires laid very quickly. Maybe for 400 or 500 yards, because those always had to be mended when shells landed on them. But it was the wireless, the radio we relied on. What was it? The 40, 41...